are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. Well, I had a couple home runs, did a few things on, nothing on the base paths, if I can talk at all. I mean, again, drunk warning here, but.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
There may actually be something to our drunken nonsense after all. Who knew?
Hip, hip, hooray.
Dilly dilly.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
It's about 1 o'clock in the morning Central Time, and we just saw the Alabama, whatever, Crimson Tide win the national championship. It's the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast, and I am with Evan Peterson. Evan, how do you feel right now?
What an intro. Like, you didn't even know we were about to talk Pirates, and here we are. We're probably going to talk 5 minutes on the national championship disaster. That was the Georgia Bulldogs. I'm doing great, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, other than trying to remember the name of Alabama as opposed to just like knowing it off the top of my head. I'm doing pretty well, but I didn't have a, team I was rooting for in the national championship. So I know you kind of did.
I did.
Give us your like very brief feeling, since I know a lot of baseball fans don't really care about this.
It hurts. I don't know if you know this about me. I'm kind of a Georgia fan. It was kind of nice. I thought the vision of Jalen Hurts on the sideline with his helmet covering his ridiculous receding hairline was going to be something I would treasure. And no, it was this other true Froshy quarterback showing up from and totally ruining my evening. And so here we are, and we're going to talk about the Pirates, and we're going to love it. And the national championship never happened, and football never happened, and here we go, football.
Well, I'm sorry the Georgia Bulldogs lost, and I was rooting for Georgia, but unfortunately things happen. It is what it is. You can't really do anything about it. But yes, we are going to talk about the Pirates today. I'm pretty excited about this team in general. There's a lot of fantasy commodities that we will certainly draft this year. Before we get into that, why don't you tell everybody where you can be reached on Twitter and all that stuff?
I mean, does it matter since Alabama won another national championship? I apologize for whatever I say on this podcast, but you can find me at EasyEv, or no, just FFW. FFWFB on the Twitter machine. I swear I have better takes about Pittsburgh Pirates than I do about the Georgia Bulldogs. So,
if it's not obvious by now, we're both a little bit inebriated after this game. So, just bear with us.
We'll get you there. Don't worry.
You can reach me on Twitter at @MyCornerFWFB, and let's get into the Pirates. So, the first guy we'll talk about is Starling Marte, somebody that I have long loved for fantasy, and obviously he got hit with a suspension last year. He's still going amongst the top 30-ish in Justin's mocks that he did earlier this offseason. How about you? Where are you wanting to take him?
I mean, you just kind of have to factor in that half season, and you have to see, okay, he hit 7 home runs in 77 games, so Steamer has him projected at 16 home runs, which I think is a little high, but 30 home runs, I'm all aboard. I think he's going to be 35-plus. Solid production, if you're kind of looking, Billy Hamilton with more power and a better batting average, then I'm in for the price. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's kind of where I'm sitting with Starling Marte.
I'm a big fan. I will continue to be a big fan of him. He is going to continue to hit. Last year he hit 7 home runs in an abbreviated season, but I think that he's a consistent 10 to 20 home run threat, even though he hasn't hit 20 home runs in a season quite yet, but he hit 19 back in 2015, and the stolen bases are there. And again, we'll keep repeating this, and this will be a common theme in every, but stolen bases are coming at a premium nowadays. And if you can get a guy that is still 29 years old, that's going to hit, anywhere between 10 to 20 home runs and give you a good batting average as well as 20 to 40 stolen bases, then I'm completely on board. So I love me some Marte, and I have no problems with him. So he on average, is being taken about top 35 in Justin's mocks. I think as we continue to go through the offseason and once the market kind of stabilizes, we will see him probably in the top 25, to be honest, because I think maybe people at the beginning of the offseason are a little bit weary of the fact that he did get suspended last year. Maybe they think that the batting average might go down a little bit or whatever. But based on everything he's done the last few years and based on his batted ball profile and everything like that, he's going to remain a high batting average asset, and he's going to continue to steal bases with, you know, a few home runs in there as well. So I really like Marte. Let's move on.
I was just going to say, it's going to be fun to see people who love to like project out end of season statistics, and they're going to look at Marte and they're going to say, ooh, 77 games if I just multiply everything by two across the board. But I don't see the power producing the 16 that Steamer has, you know, projected for him. But a lot of the other what they have predicted for him, I'm all aboard.
I have done my projection on Marte, and I had him down for 14, and that's, you know, every projection system, including my own, is very conservative, but it's always a range. So, I mean, you can see
two home runs either way. You're not going to crucify anybody on.
Yeah, exactly. And to be fair, his hard contact was a little bit down once he returned last year. So I will give that a little bit of credence if people are a little bit down on Marte. But again, this is a top 40 player. There's not a lot to really say here other than he's going to be a really solid fantasy contributor. There's no worries here.
Nothing like another dirty piss is going to strike him out for an entire season or anything like that. Or you think it's just one of those, he kind of learned his lesson and he's probably not going to go back to the well, or any type of regression? You know, he was obviously on, you know, something. So you thought his results were a little bolstered.
With mainly speed guys like D. Gordon and Marte, I really don't worry about it. It's one thing if it's a power guy, but with Marte and with D. Gordon for that matter, I really don't have a second guess about it. I think that they're going to be fine.
Fair enough.
Let's move on to Andrew McCutchen, who has been in the in trade talks really for the majority of the offseason. He really came at a pretty decent cost last season and kind of had a season that was comparable to, you know, 2014, 2015, not quite his prime years back in 2012 and 2013, but kind of rebounded a bit last year. What are you thinking about Andrew McCutchen for this year at age 31, and are you willing to draft him?
Well, the fantasy community definitely panicked on Andrew McCutchen, and he posed a very good buying opportunity. I think the question is kind of what you think the odds are that he's going to be dealt, but he was hitting .223 at the beginning of June. The grounders were absolutely killing his batting average, and he turned it around, and I think that a guy that's been a .290, .300 hitter, like, you know, he's not going to reach the stratosphere that he reached back then, but he's shown a solid batting ball profile. Excuse me. The alcohol is trying to speak for me. The O contact percentage was really high last year, like 10% higher than what he'd seen the previous two seasons. I mean, I still love him, and I don't know if part of that is like the Kutch touch and I'm just buying into him, but, 23 home runs for Steamer seems a little low for me. I think I'm going to give him 25 just on name value alone, and I'm going to let that bias play. And I think people are going to discount him either because they think he's going to get moved or because of the year last year, and I don't think it's deserved at all.
Well, I went about pick 75 in Justin's mocks, and I think that's about fair. He's always had really, really good plate skills, and that's one thing that you could bank on going into last year. And really, going into 2017, I had a problem with the speed because I was worried about his lower body injuries that he had accrued the last couple of years. And really, if he's not going to be stealing double-digit bases, then he's not as big of a value to your team. But again, he rebounded for 11 stolen bases in 2017. Do I think that he's going to steal 11 again this year? I mean, I think it's a possibility. I would really not argue with you if you thought he was going to steal a couple more or a couple less. But one thing we can bank on with him is just how good of a hitter he actually is. And that's what I really love about McCutchen in general or at large is just the fact that he is a very polished hitter up there. The home runs, I agree. I think he will probably hit more than 23, maybe upwards of 25 to 27, maybe even 28. He does have that kind of batted ball profile and hard contact ability that he can do that. But at the end of the day, I have no problems with him. He's not necessarily a target of mine because I don't think he will really surpass any of the production that he put up last year. But I do think that he's going to stay remain a stable fantasy commodity for at least this season. And depending on where he goes, we might see some more run and RBI opportunities. He did score 94 runs and bat in 88 guys last year. So that's a pretty solid season overall. So despite where he gets dealt, I don't think we can really expect him to do much more than that. But at the same time, once again, I think that the fact that he is such a polished hitter is going to remain a big part of his game. And I think that he's going to be pretty fantasy relevant no matter where he goes. So I'm pretty on board with McCutchen. And at pick 75-ish, I think that's a pretty solid place to get him.
Yeah, I think the big regulator of his price is going to be the stolen bases. And like you said, it could be a couple more, a couple less. Steamer has him at 9 right now. But if you said he was going to steal, 14, 15, I don't think anybody could really argue with you the other way either.
Agreed. Let's transition over to Gregory Polanco, a guy that I was pretty wrong about last year. I had him as a breakout candidate for me going into 2017. And once again, injuries kind of derailed a guy that we were taking upwards of the fourth, fifth, sixth round in 2017. This year, he's probably going to come at a better cost in the sixth, seventh, eighth round. And I'm once again all aboard that price. How about you?
I mean, it's just kind of funny that you look at, the 411 plate appearances. The run and RBI totals were absolute travesties at 39 and 35. But, I mean, he still stole a decent amount of bases, not like the 15 that you probably thought he was going to steal. Steamer has him at 12 right now. But that 251 batting average, I don't know if you think the shoulder is going to be better this year, if you think it's going to lend to a little more. I mean, his contact percentage went up, his contact percentage went up, and you think those would be factors that would drive his batting average up last year, and it was 258, and last year he hit 251. He struck out less. I mean, you think these are all factors that were kind of combined for a better profile, and the injuries just kind of derailed him. So I think it depends on how you feel those could sway either way. But I think at the price point that you're describing, it provides a decent buying opportunity, although it's not the first route I'd go. I mean, I think I'm going to look at Fantasy Pros kind of ADP data, and I'm going to throw some would you rathers your way. I think there's other routes you could go in this price range.
Yeah, I disagree. I've always been a big fan of Polanco, and he's somebody that has gradually gotten better at each level that he has went to. So, going into last year, I kind of consider it a injury plague season, and it's not necessarily something I'm just going to throw away, but I do think it's something that we can give him a little bit of forgiveness for. So, last year he did have a career high in contact percentage at 84%. His fly ball percentage has increased each of the last few years that he's been in the league. He's always had the upside for 25 to 30 home runs. He did have 22 in 2016, and he's always been fast. I mean, despite being injured last year, his speed score was still about the same as it was in 2016, where he stole 17 bases. He might not be a guy that steals 30 again, which he almost did in 2015. But I do think somewhere in the vicinity of 25 and 20 in terms of home runs and stolen bases is on the table for him. And based on his natural hitting ability, I think that he can be upwards of a 280 hitter. So 280 possibilities with almost 30 home runs and 20 to 25 stolen bases is certainly in there. And that would put him as a second to third round earner in fantasy. So I'm completely on board him. I think that he is going to be a massive bargain this year. Yes, health is going to be permitting here, but I, at the same time, I'm really on board Gregory Polanco, and I'm going to give it one more try. I think some people are getting a little bit impatient with him at this point, and he's only 26 years old, and he's somebody that once again has really polished up his game as he's matured a bit. So I'm really on board.
Okay. So let me throw some names your way. Gregory Polanco or Tommy Pham?
Polanco.
Polanco. Okay. So that means I need to go higher. I'm trying to figure out how the scale works here. Gregory Polanco or, well, we know you're Nelson Cruz love. Billy Hamilton.
I'm going to go Hamilton.
Okay. Byron Buxton.
Polanco.
Yoenis Cespedes.
Polanco.
Okay. I mean, so you're saying he's a solid top, what, 80? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think he's a solid top 80 pick for sure. Last year, he was in the top 60s-ish in his ADP. To be exact, he was 63. This year, I would have to look for it, but I'm assuming he was somewhere in the 7th, 8th round, maybe in that vicinity, and I'm willing to grab him any day of the week at that price. So, he was pick 91 was his average ADP in Justin's mocks. So yeah, somewhere in that vicinity. I'm completely on board with that. He was a top 111 was his max, and it looks like 75 was his minimum draft spot. So I'm completely on board.
Okay, fair enough. Polanco or Andrew McCutchen? You're still taking McCutchen squarely ahead.
I'm going to take Polanco. Betting on a rebound, pretty massive rebound for this year.
I don't know that a lot of people would see it the way you did, so that's why I threw it out there. So
probably not, but believe it or not, fantasy isn't something that is predictive each and every year. Like, things shift. I mean, if we look at the rankings every single year in fantasy, they are drastically different. So guess what? I bet Gregory Polanco going into 2019 drafts is going to be a top 4-round pick. You heard it here first. It's not that bold, but I bet that's going to be the facts.
There you go.
Let's move on to the infield. So Josh Bell, somebody that I have long loved in the minor leagues and shows some of the best plate skills in the minor leagues, was given a good amount of time last year in 2017, and he ended up popping 26 home runs. Somebody that really a lot of people didn't think would end up hitting for a lot of power, ended up hitting for a good amount of it. Did do that with a 51% ground ball rate. Going into this year, he's probably somebody that I haven't looked at the ADP, but probably is going to be taken amongst the top 20 to, 22 first basemen. Are you on board with that price?
I am. And I think there could be a little growth in Bell's batted ball profile. You were talking about the 50% ground ball percentage. 17 qualified hitters hit over 50% grounders, but there were guys that were popping 25 home runs or somewhere around there. Eric Hosmer, Robinson Cano, Trey Mancini, Tommy Pham, ? It may seem like common sense, but I'd like to see him improve when he's behind in counts. As a minor leaguer, he hit .235 when he was behind in the count, .353 when he was ahead. The numbers were about 50 points lower in his big tours at that level, but about the same stretch. It's not anything uncommon to see. But 25 home runs from a guy that you're going to draft as probably a corner infielder or utility spot couldn't be the worst thing in the world. And I do think that, we're talking about his ability to take a walk or avoid a strikeout. If you play in leagues that, award peripherals like an OBP league, he definitely gets a bump there. So I'm on board with you where you're at with Josh Bell.
Yeah, I think that he's going to be a steady but not sexy contributor at first base or corner. I don't think that the power is going to end up being more than 30 home runs, and that's just based on his bad ball profile. I understand Hosmer last year did pretty well despite having a 50% ground ball rate, but typically somebody that has a 50% ground ball rate or better ends up not hitting for 30 home runs, and I think that is pretty safe to say with Bell at this point, especially when you factor in the fact that he was not a big power guy in the minor leagues. So I'm completely in for Bell. I think that he's a polished hitter. I think he will hit for a pretty solid batting average. And when I say that, I mean probably upwards of .275-ish. But I think that will come with a really good walk rate and not so great power numbers. So that's pretty much what you'll get out of him. Depending on where you want to take him is up to you. But I think that he's going to end up being a pretty solid contributor at a position that is pretty deep, but not really that deep in terms of great hitters. It's more or less guys that can hit for some power, this and that. But right now his ADP, at least in the early mocks, was 187 on average. And I'm completely in at that price, especially if you end up kind of missing on some of the upper echelon guys at first. I'm completely in to get a guy like Bell at that point. So very polished hitter. Somebody that's going to do well in on-base percentage leagues as well. I just would kind of temper your expectations on the power based on the fact that he is not the type of power hitter, at least right now, until he changes his bat ball profile, that's going to hit for upwards of 30 home runs. That's just not the way he is built at this point. That's just not his approach. So,
yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things where you walk into owning Josh Bell and you should probably understand how those things are going to impact your team. But at the end of the day, if a difference of 4 home runs is, you know, a difference of 30 points in batting average, is it really that much of a trade-off if you're getting him that much cheaper? I don't really think it is. And that's where I think the profit potential lies with Josh Bell.
I agree. I think this day and age in fantasy, if you get a guy that hits for a better batting average, that makes more of a difference to your team than somebody that's going to end up hitting for a couple more home runs. Now, it'd be one thing if Josh Bell was a 13 home run guy, like a James Loney, somebody that was going to hit for 280 batting average, but only hit you 13 home runs, which is what I think Dom Smith is going to do. But it's another thing for a guy that's going to still hit over 20 bombs because he's really not dropping you much in the power category. And I think you bring up a great point. That's something when you're looking at your team as a whole that a lot of people don't factor in. It's just like, okay, I'll give away four home runs or 5 home runs in exchange for a bunch of batting average from this one position that usually doesn't give a lot of batting average in general. So
yeah, let's right on. There may actually be something to our drunken nonsense after all. Who knew?
Hip hip hooray.
Dilly dilly.
Dilly dilly. Speaking of dilly dilly, let's talk about Josh Harrison's dilly dilly ass.
Yeah.
You in or out? He's age 30 at this point. Last year, he ended up getting $15 in roto value. He had 16 home runs, 12 stolen bases. The RBIs weren't there, but he did end up hitting for .270 batting average for the 4th straight season in a row or better. Are you in on Josh Harrison?
It was like the quietest 16 bombs you've ever seen in your entire life from Josh Harrison, who missed the last month of the season. But, I mean, you dive into the numbers a little bit. 6 of those came in left-handed pitching, 128 plate appearances. He'd hit 8 home runs off of his previous 532 plate appearances against Southpaws. So, I mean, he's going to slip back there. But when you hit the ball in the air and you hit it as hard as he did, when you look at his splits, you kind of see what happens. Almost 41% fly balls and 32.5% hard hit rate. Kind of, you know, transferred his career numbers and made him a profit. I think what you're going to have to kind of factor in is what he's going to provide you in the stolen bases, because you have to factor in your brain that the power is not going to be exactly where it is. So it's kind of one of those things where, like Andrew McCutchen, the steals are going to dictate where his value will actually lie at the end of the season. But I think as a guy who's being forgotten at the end of drafts, I think you could do a lot worse than a Josh Harrison type.
Yeah, his underlying power metrics, really, they weren't even a career high. It was pretty comparable to the 2013 and 2014 seasons. And while there's a stark difference between home runs there based on plate appearances and such, there really wasn't a big difference in terms of his underlying power metrics. And he does hit a good amount of fly balls and line drives, enough to where I think that 15 home runs is certainly in the cards again. Now, the 16 home runs is like, what, the same exact thing? But if somebody were to tell me that they have him pegged for 20 home runs this year, I really wouldn't be that surprised. Now, he would have to face probably a ton of lefties. But at the same time, like, he's not an inept hitter against righties at the same time. He's hit, you know, .267 last year against righties, .277 the year before, .282, .307. So he's always been a pretty decent hitter in general, and he's always had a pretty good contact percentage as well. I mean, last year he had an 81% contact rate. For his career, he's at 84%. Pretty polished hitter, not somebody that's going to walk a lot, so he does take a dip in on-base percentage formats, but his speed score did go down a pretty good amount last season. I think somewhere in the vicinity of 10 stolen bases is what we should expect, not somewhere in the vicinity of 19, which he stole in 2016. But if you can kind of hinder your expectations to like a 15-10 season with a 260 to 280 batting average, then I'm completely on board that. Last year going into drafts, he was a 280 pick. This year, right now, at least his market is about at 230-ish. I'm okay with that. I don't think he's sexy at all. He's not going to give you much upside, but he's still somebody that is going to provide some value for you in fantasy, despite the fact that his name really doesn't give you a lot of sexiness in general.
Yeah, and the other thing you're going to want to look at is the 9 home runs he yanked against pull balls. He had hit 2 in, 300 at-bats. He hit 9 in 176 last year. So the power is going to fluctuate with him, but I think as a solid contributor in X, Y, and Z category across the board, I think Josh Harrison has the ability to kind of pop up in a number of different categories as opposed to, okay, we peg him for these three, and if he bombs out in one, then I guess you're kind of screwed. Like, I think Harrison has the ability to float you in a number of different categories depending on how a season goes.
Agreed. I think he's more of a deep league guy. If you play in deeper leagues, he's somebody that can kind of fill a void for you.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Out of Francisco Cervelli, Jordy Mercer, and David Freese, who do you want to talk about?
Not a whole lot, because I think there's, enough on the third base market. Like, had the Pirates gone ahead and signed Zach Cozart for third base, I mean, I think it would have been an interesting conversation, but I don't think David Freese kind of relegates enough to talk about for an extended period of time.
I agree. Let's move.
Yeah, Cervelli, no, and I don't even remember who the third guy was. So
Jordy Mercer.
No, absolutely. You were going to talk about Jordy Mercer.
I agree on David Freese on all counts. He is at best, an NL-only league guy. With Francisco Cervelli, I think that he is, once again, a serviceable hitter. He had a 249 average last year, but I think that for his career, he's a much better hitter. He's a 275 hitter for his career. Always takes a walk, so that's really nice to see. And yep, he doesn't strike out a ton for a catcher. I don't think that he's going to hit for any power or anything like that, but you could do worse in NL-only or two-catcher formats than Cervelli. For Jordy Mercer, I have long used him as a DFS option whenever he's leading off against lefties. Mind you, last year, he only hit 248 against southpaws with 4 home runs and 121 at bats. But for his career, it's almost a 300 hitter against southpaws. So at least in daily lineup leagues, you can use him or toggle him in whenever he is in fact facing a lefty. But in general or at large, he's not a very big fantasy commodity. He's somebody that hit for 14 home runs last year and hit 250 on the season. That's not amazing, but he's also somebody that does something. So despite not having a great bat ball profile and hard contact and such, he is somebody that will probably hit once again for double digit home runs and probably be close to a full-time player this year. He might, I wouldn't be shocked if he lost his job to a couple of these other guys here on the bench, but in general, I think that he's an okay option. Nothing special.
Yeah. And pour one out for Jung Ho Kang, who is probably the only person on the same level as us right now. So,
yeah, I'm going to avoid Jung Ho Kang because I'm going to say something, especially at this point right now where I'm at mentally. I would say some really disrespectful things, so I'm just going to kind of leave it alone. But Jung Ho Kang is...
I'll go there. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, no words for him right now. But Gerrit Cole, he probably will get dealt. I don't know for a fact, yes. But
talk about him anyways, though, right?
For sure. Going into last year, I went out on a limb and said he had the upside to be a top 10 starter, and obviously he didn't end up doing that, but he did go over 200 innings once again for the second time in his career, which was great to see. Yes, he had a 4.5 ERA, but in an age of baseball where 200 inning guys just are no longer available, I think that Cole presents a pretty decent upside and buying opportunity at this point. Do I think he will ever be the, quote unquote fantasy ace that a lot of people pegged him to be, especially even in the draft when he first got drafted? Maybe not, but he has a pretty decent ground ball profile, still pretty decent strikeouts despite, only having about 8.7 per nine last year. He kept the walks in check. Swing strike rate is pretty solid. He still has some work to do on his overall command, and that's kind of my hesitation with him overall about being a number one type guy. But I do think grabbing him as a number two for your fantasy staff or number three is still something that is really good and really sharp to do as a fantasy owner in general. So I really like Garrett Cole. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of talked about the colliding of fantasy worlds. So you had the 200 inning pitch guy and the guy who had the huge uptick in home runs. And it kind of collided to create this like, meh, I don't want to own him. The home runs jumped and it was a 4.25 ERA. He gave up 20 dingers on the road while facing 450 batters. He'd given up 13 road home runs in his career on over 1,100 batters. There's other fun stats I have like that, but I'm not in a position to give them to you right now. I'm just going to tell you that the left-handed, I'm going to be honest, and I'm sorry, Justin, but yeah, sure. The left-handed, I could read exactly from my list. Garrett Cole had given up 16 home runs to left-handed hitters in his career until 2017. He gave up 18 last year. On the surface, sure, there were slight upticks in his fly ball percentage and his hard hit rate, but those slight gains don't seem to explain the jump in the home run to fly ball percentage until you start breaking it down by hit direction, where the pulled liners and drives really killed him. It was a 21.5% home run fly ball rate before last year, and it was up over 42% in 2017. It's all disgusting, but I think Garrett Cole is talented enough that it's going to come back down, and I think it's going to provide a decent buying opportunity for him this year.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah, is that the easy way to say I had enough stats, but he's a lot better than what he showed last year.
I think you did a fabulous job. I mean, I have no problems with what you gave. I mean, it was a hot take, man. I mean, it was solid.
That's what we're doing. I mean, I've been serving them up all night, other than Georgia was going to win the national championship. Jameson Taillon, do you have any other hot takes besides fuck cancer? I'm going to earn the explicit tag right there.
He's a great man. I will say Cole is going at about the same spot he was going into last year. So if you want him, you are going to have to pay probably in the vicinity of a top 100 pick. I have no problem with that at all. As far as Taillon, he just give it up for the guy for coming back from what he came back from in a very short amount of time, to be honest. He came right back in June after pretty much sitting out a lot of May. Now, I will say his second half from July on, he ended up being a pretty mediocre pitcher at that point. He had a 5.57 ERA and a 1.58 whip. Now, I will say Baseball HQ's expected ERA metric had him at 4.31. So that means that he was getting unlucky a bit, and it should have been more in that area. Overall, I really like his arsenal. I love the changeup. His curveball is pretty solid, and his fastball is he commands it pretty well. It's not an electric pitch by any means, but he did average about 95 miles an hour last year, and he continued to keep that velocity the whole entire season. We didn't see really any meaningful drop-offs at any time. He did have a really bad month in home runs in May, and that was in a short sample, and then also in August a bit. But other than that, he did a pretty good job of keeping the ball in the park. He also, like Garrett Cole, should be pitching in a pretty decent park as well in PNC for home runs. The swing strike rate isn't above average. It's at 9% both halves, and I don't necessarily think it's going to increase. So I do think that his strikeout rate of 8.4 per nine is pretty sound going into this year in terms of a projection for him. But I'm not necessarily excited about Taillon, but I think that he can be a really quality, stable fantasy number three or four for you, and somebody that you just do not have to worry about. Yes, he had 130 innings last year. I think that he could probably bump that up to like 160 this season, and we could probably expect somewhere in the vicinity of like a 3.5 to 4.2 ERA. But I'm really tantalized by him. I think that he's a pretty solid option. He keeps the ball on the ground, like I already mentioned. He has a pretty decent strikeout rate. He gets ahead and counts, 62% first pitch strike rate each of the last 2 years. There's not a lot to really dislike about him other than the fact that he maybe could get a few more swings and misses. But other than that, he's a pretty stable option. And at 26 years old is somebody that I really have a lot of love for. So I'm a fan of Taillon.
Yeah, and I don't know, and this may be a totally, random-ass statement, but I don't know if people are, factoring in the fact that the cancer diagnosis may be something more serious and, you know, it may just be a chance for a lost season at any point in time, to which I would say, I mean, D. Gordon's a dirty piss away from missing a year. I mean, it's the exact same thing. You were talking about Tyon going later into games. He threw 30 more innings compared to 2016 over 7 more starts. I feel like there's more depth into games for Jameson, and he came out really strong in 2017 against left-handed hitters and 231 batting average before he missed a month and a half following his diagnosis, which, I mean, a cancer diagnosis, you think about guys like John Lester or Anthony Rizzo, guys that have, you know, beat it and gone on to have, you know, solid careers afterwards. I mean, that's typically when they were a little bit, you know, younger, and Tyon had to deal with it in the middle of a season. So I'm willing to give him a pass. But if other fantasy owners aren't willing to give him the same discount on draft day, then I'm totally willing to hop on if people will forget why we were drafting him so high going into last year. And, you know, things weren't drastically different in, you know, 2017. And nothing that I wouldn't necessarily chalk up to a guy being told he has nut cancer. And I'm sorry that it's really, like, blunt and, you know, brutal to say, but I think that Jameson is a competitor and he's going to come out, and I think you're going to see much better things, and I would have absolutely no trouble buying him in 2018.
As of right now, the decisions that you would have to make on draft day are Tyon versus Tanner Roark. Who are you choosing?
Jameson Tyon all day.
Absolutely free.
Mason Mox, Jameson Tyon or Dylan Bundy?
Tyon. Not close.
Yeah, not close. Trevor Bauer?
Tyon.
It's closer, and I've been a Bauer apologist, but I couldn't fault you for going either way.
Same with Lance Lynn. I would go with him over to Lance Lynn. The only one that I'm kind of hesitating on is Jeff Samardzija, just because we can pretty much at this point guarantee that he's going to go a long amount of innings. And when I'm saying that, I know he's gone over 200, but I'm thinking at least 180. I think that we can pencil that in for Samardzija. So
yeah, it's one of those things, and I've always had this thing in the back of my mind that thinks that Samardzija is going to break down. It's not necessarily the football thing, although I could understand it. You know, he kind of had the option to go either way, but I completely see where you're going with. But Samardzija was absolutely awesome last year, so maybe that's part of it playing into it for me.
Absolutely. Let's continue on with his pitching staff. Ivan Nova, who had a really, really good first half, 3.08 ERA, 1.11 WHIP. It just did a really good job for fantasy owners. Didn't do a great job in the strikeout category. And I know during the season last year, I was a guy that was saying, get off the train, trade him for whatever you can. This is not going to last. We have always liked his ground ball percentage, but in the second half last year, everything kind of fell off the rails a bit. 5.58 ERA, 1.51 WHIP. Even the expected ERA on HQ had him at a 4.45 ERA, which isn't terrible. And that also means he got a little bit unlucky. But we just knew that regression was kind of coming a bit. The strikeouts did bump up. So technically, when you look at the overall value for him, it really was better in the second half just based on the strikeouts and everything. But what I will say is that he did a good job of not allowing a lot of walks each of the last 2 years. He's made 30 starts and he's had, you know, 1.6 walks per nine or better, or 1.7 walks per nine or better in each of those last two seasons. He does a really good job of getting ahead in counts. And that's another thing that they did a really good job in Pittsburgh with him of, is just having him lean on the fastball, get ahead in counts, and get a lot of ground ball outs. And that's really what kind of saved him, at least for the first half. But the problem is the strikeouts aren't going to really be that elevated despite playing in the National League. But we have to remember, like, this was a guy that was pretty much not even a fantasy guy or factor with New York. And then he goes over to Pittsburgh and he ended up being a pretty solid starter for fantasy owners. But in general, I'm not that high on Nova. I think that he can end up replicating you know, pretty much what he did last year, which was in the vicinity of like a 4.2 ERA and a 1.3 WHIP. I think we probably will see something like that again this year, but this is a guy that has had some injury issues. He's thrown 160 or more innings in each of the last 2 years. So I could easily see some injury risk here. A guy that also doesn't have a ton of upside based on his stuff and the strikeout rate in general. And somebody that we really just haven't seen consistently be a successful fantasy starter. So I'm kind of lukewarm on somebody like Nova. How about you?
Yeah, it's funny how you kind of break down. And I think everybody going into him last year was talking about the walk rate. First half last year, just over 3%. Second half, you're looking over 7%. But the strikeout percentage definitely ticked up. It was over 21% in the second
half.
Home
runs. He's giving up home runs for his career as well.
Yeah. You know what's funny is you also talk about the bump in the first strike percentage, which was a plus. He was the 13th highest in the bigs last year, but he wasn't doing anything by being ahead. He was 246 after getting ahead in the counts 0-1, which was near the bottom if you look at qualified leaderboards. So I mean, I guess you can kind of, you know, play with those numbers and make your own decisions as you see fit. I guess if I want to glean a positive from last year, it'd be his work through the first time of a lineup. So after struggling the final 2 years of his New York residence, Nova got back to striking out 20% of batters he faced for the first time, and he had a career low whip against those samples. So I think that Nova is a guy who's eventually kind of headed for the bullpen, and I think anybody who's watched Nova in the past could kind to see this coming. I don't think he's necessarily a guy that's extended run starter, but not that I think the Pirates have anybody to really follow up with him. I just don't necessarily know how the skills are going to portend down the road, and therefore, like you were saying, a third and fourth road for Nova. I mean, he was getting a lot more buzz at the end of draft season last year because of things like the walk rate and PNC and XYZ, but I just think Nova's kind of a blah name that if you run out of last picks in a 14 team, you can go ahead and throw his name out there, but I wouldn't be really expecting anything else beyond that.
Agreed. Transition to Chad Kuhl. I saw a couple of really good months out of him. Specifically, if you look at, really the second half last year, 3.51 ERA, which is awesome. 1.45 whip, not great. The control was almost at 5 walks per 9. So that's obviously not something we want for fantasy. Almost 9 strikeouts per 9, though, despite a mediocre 9% swinging strike rate. The velocity ticked up a little bit for him as the season went on, which is something that we like to see as well. But I can't really... I don't really know what to make of him, because if you look at like June and July last year, he had a 50% and 49% ground ball rate. Then all of a sudden in August and September, he ended up dropping to 39% and 36% and gave up a lot more fly balls. That came with a higher strikeout rate and also fluctuations in his first pitch strike rate as well. You're going to see some fluctuations in his left on base rate, which is going to obviously kind of coincide with either his ERA or expected ERA or xFIP, whichever way you want to look at it. But in general, what I see here is inconsistency, and I think that overall that makes him something of a NL-only starter, somebody that you can use in those type formats, deeper formats. But based on just what I see on the surface here, I'm not really expecting much other than 150 innings of mediocre ball with a couple strikeouts, but also you're going to be a little bit worried about the walks.
I think the one thing you're going to want to look at, Kuhl, as you're looking through this year, is you're going to want to look at where he's touching with his fastball velocity and where he's hitting at with his curveball percentage, because he was a guy who had kind of ramped it up in the fastball department. And when he started debuting the curveball last year, or at least if you kind of look at like PitchFX type data, it coincided to some of his successes. But I agree with what you're saying with Kuhl. And I don't know if you compare him to, I don't know if you were going to get to a Trevor Williams who was pimped over at Razzball, and Trevor Williams had actually tweeted out that he was going to pitch this season for him. I don't know who you would actually want to lean on, but I think I'm in the Williams band camp.
I agree. I'm in the Williams camp, but it's not by much. It's pretty slim margin at this point. I think that Williams can be serviceable. In general, I'm just not that excited about either of them, to be honest, though. It's kind of like, you know, whatever at this point. He did up his first pitch strike rate, you know, from years past. Williams did. And I think that based on, you know, his home run, like he only gave up 0.8 home runs per nine last year, which is great. And that's something that, you know, we certainly love based on the fact that he plays in PNC Park and everything. But he, you know, is a probably more of a 4.3 ERA guy, 4.5, somewhere in there, with mediocre strikeout numbers, okay walk numbers, and, you know, will probably get, you know, hit around a bit. Like, of his 25 starts last year, he had 11 quality starts. There's not a lot that I love about him, but I do think that he's going to be in the rotation. He's only 26 years old. We'll probably see him in the rotation for the majority of the season this year, which will probably give you a good amount of innings. So I don't mind Williams, but I'm just not that enthused.
Yeah, and I realize that I said Bandcamp on Williams, and this is not American Pie. But, it was a very interesting article that Gray wrote over at Razzball, and I'm not going to steal any of his thunder, and I'm going to send you guys over there. So, I'm in the Williams over cool bandwagon, though.
Heard that. The bullpen, Felipe Rivero, my question to you is, do you think he keeps the job all year?
I don't see why he wouldn't. I mean, the tick up for velocity in Rivero is an obvious plus, but the one stat that really kind of stands out for me, any guesses on what that stat might be? I mean, you kind of have gotten in my head over the past couple of days as we've talked teams.
Probably something that has to do with his swing and strike rate.
I don't know. His 75.1% Z contact percentage, which was the seventh lowest of qualified relievers in all of baseball last year. So some of the names in front of him, you know, Kimbrel, Betances, Jansen, Knebel, and some of them you may not know, Chad Green or Kirby Yates. But I think Felipe Rivero is
both
an
of those are
guy.
Pretty. Both of those names, Kirby Yates and Chad Green, are both like kind of under the radar deep league names that, you know, you could use in relievers. But go on. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, that may be kind of the emphasis on why you would want to draft them. I'm just saying that I think Felipe Rivero is going to go kind of undervalued at the draft table. And if it's going to be, you know, hey, I want to grab a, high second tier reliever, I just kind of want the cheapest one of a Chapman, who guys seem to be down on, and Edwin Diaz, a Ken Giles. Felipe Rivero's down here. Like, I think he's going to provide a very interesting buying opportunity. I'm going to see where he's going on the Mason mocks right now while you talk.
Yeah, the one thing that you can bank on with Rivero, and despite whatever happens with the closer role, which I don't really love to bank on lefties keeping the role, but there is certain guys that just keep it no matter what because they are that good. But Rivero is always going to be a safe option because he's always going to be a late inning guy. He gave up, get this, an 82 batting average to lefties last year. 82. That has to be among the leaders, if not the best in baseball. 161 on base average against lefties. It's absolutely insane. He's given up one home run to a lefty in his whole entire career, which I find awesome as well. His swing strike rate was 16% last year, which has to be great among relievers or any qualified starters at that point. 98 mile an hour fastball, we love. I mean, there's really not, at 53% ground ball rate, there's really nothing that I can find in his metrics that or underlying skills that make me think that he is not going to be a top reliever in this game. So that, as far as his role, that's the only question, is whether they are going to continue to let him close games. And I, at least right now, I don't think that there will be somebody that, you know, surpasses him in the closer pecking order, unless they end up signing a guy that just has a righty in particular that ends up having better skills than him. Not necessarily better skills, but is more suited for the ninth inning so that they can use Rivero in other innings and such and situational spots. But for right now, I think Rivero is firmly in the top 10 amongst closers in fantasy, and I have no problem with that.
It's okay. So you were talking about Felipe Rivero and his 0.082 batting average against lefties. Would you like to guess who the second best pitcher against left-handed pitching was last year?
Chapman.
No, he's not even on like top 10 for what I'm looking at right now.
Boone Logan.
I'm going to assume that's the alcohol talking. I will give you one more. One of these names is a guy that you love, and one of these guys is a name that everybody loved.
Kershaw.
Okay, no. Carl Edwards Jr. was the guy that you loved last year, and he was a 117 against left-handed pitching last year. Chris Devenski was a 110 against Rivera's .82. So, yeah. Real quick, I was going to throw some names at you. So, Felipe Rivera or Wade Davis?
Rivera.
I think we did this the last time when we were talking about the Reds and Raisel Iglesias. Yeah. Rivera or Giles?
Giles for now. My only question about Rivera is whether he keeps the role all year. If you're talking skills perspective, I think Rivera is a top five reliever.
Who do you think's going to pay you? Tony Watson was the guy I couldn't think of in the Braves preview. If you're listening to me yammer on like an idiot about left-handed relievers. So, I mean, who do you think he's going to get usurped by?
I just worry about lefty relievers in general keeping closer spots, because Rivera is used to being a situational lefty anyways, and Chapman has been like pretty much the only lefty guy that we could rely on. Britton had a couple years of stardom, I would say, and he probably will continue to be a closer once he comes back from his injury, probably halfway through next year. But Doolittle, but he also lost it too, partially to injury. But it's really hard to because managers like righties in that role more. So that's the only thing that puts me up in arms about Rivera in general. But again, I have no problem drafting him amongst the top 10 because his skills are so great. Like, even if he ends up losing the role the first day of the season because they have found some other righty that they like more, he is still going to provide a massive amount of value to you because his skills are so good. And so, like, I'm not down on Rivera at all. It's more or less I'm just a little worried about the role. And that's not even a big worry. It's just a slight, you know, thought in my head that he could end up getting usurped by somebody because he's a lefty. But again, like, this isn't me trying to like throw any cold water on Rivera at all. It's just more I'm worried about the lefty spot.
Understandable. So you talk about a guy like Edwin Diaz, who actually lost his job a couple times last year.
Yeah, I still would go Diaz because I think that his role is secure. But from a skills perspective, again, Rivera.
Okay. Cody Allen, Raisel Iglesias, any of these other guys you want to kind of chuck around here?
Yeah, I said Raisel in the Reds pod, but that again is because I feel secure about Raisel's role in the closer spot. But I think that if you are listening to me right now and you're like, well, I think Rivera's going to be the closer no matter what, I think you're fucking high, Mike, then I think that you should take Rivera as a top five closer. Or if you get him later, then you should certainly do that as well.
I'm down with everything you said in that sentence. And I mean, absolutely everything. Is there anything else you want to talk about in the Pirates right now? Or Minuteman Matt going to come clean us up?
Brazen? Yeah, I'll mention Daniel Hudson. I think that he could be the backup. I didn't love what I saw from him last year in general, but he will probably end up being somebody that ends up getting late innings for them. On the bench, though, I do like Adam Frazier a bit. I don't know if you have any takes on him or if you did any research on him, but I do like him as a deep league ad.
No, I didn't. I was just going to say, we did have the Dan Hudson talk last year. Like, we were talking about this pre-show. Did that actually happen?
Yeah, I believe we did, and it didn't really work out that great. It ended up being a 4.3 or 4.4 ERA, 1.5 WHIP, and about 10 strikeouts per nine, which was great. But he's still, his swing strike rate was awesome, which ended up, equating to a pretty solid strikeout rate. But he gave up a good amount of home runs, and I mean, nothing out of the ordinary for him the last couple of years. But the problem for him is really just being able to strand runners at a good clip, and his BABIP has stayed relatively high throughout his career. He has really, usually pitchers kind of drop down to a certain percentage at some point, but his BABIP for the majority of his career has stayed somewhere in the vicinity of 330 or higher, and I don't think he'll ever be able to get out of that. So that's kind of his baseline, is about 30 average BABIP against or higher. He also doesn't really depend on any type of grounders. He's more of a fly ball guy, gives up a ton of line drives. He has the last few years. So, I mean, there's not a lot. There's no resurgence coming from Hudson. He's just more or less going to be a guy that situationally we can use for fantasy as kind of a high leverage reliever that can give us some strikeouts, which I think is pretty solid. But I wouldn't expect him taking over any roles anytime soon.
Yeah, and Adam Frazier, if you want to look at him, you're going to start him when he's batting at the top of the lineup against right-handed pitching, and that's about it. So, yeah, anything else?
Sean Rodriguez is also on their team. I just want to mention him, give a little shout-out. I know he had a car accident, I believe, going into last year.
Right after he was signed by the Braves, and he was supposed to be our starting second baseman. And then, yeah, he had the car accident. He was out for, 5 months, something like that. So,
Yeah, I think that he'll get a good amount of time against lefties this year, more than likely, and he can play all around the diamond. So I think for NL only, he's certainly a guy that you can grab at a very, very, very low cost, and he won't really disappoint you in any way. He's always had a good amount of power. Jose Osuna is the last guy I'll talk about. He ended up having a little bit of, success in fantasy last year. Are you familiar with Osuna at all?
No, but I think it's funny you talk about Sean Rodriguez because I remember the big spike in his power, which was his 18 home run 2016 season. And had he actually hit more than 18 home runs the rest of his career? I mean, it's been pretty uninspiring. So
I remember when he was on the Rays, he had 10 home runs in one spring training and people went ape shit over him in the preseason and ended up drafting him almost everywhere. And he didn't surpass 12 or 10 home runs in any season prior to 2014. So, there you go. Sean Rodriguez is an NL only name, but he does have a good power bat in general. He's just not somebody that you can rely on in any type of way. But Adam Frazier, I do find a little bit more interesting. I think that he is somebody that, especially against righties, is going to hit 270 or better. He has a really good contact rate. He doesn't hit the ball all that hard, but he is somebody that I think can hit a couple home runs. He had 400 at bats last year, 6 home runs, 9 stolen bases. That's not a terrible NL only play. And Jordy Mercer really isn't that great. So I can certainly see him, Adam Frazier, playing kind of all over the diamond. I don't think he can play shortstop necessarily, but second base, the outfield, a bunch of different places, be a utility type guy with a decent walk rate, good contact percentage. I kind of like that profile nowadays in fantasy where all the players that you can get for free are all power hitters that have a good walk rate. Adam Frazier kind of gives us an opportunity to grab a guy that really gives us a high contact profile with some good batting average and a little bit of speed. So that's the only reason I wanted to highlight him. Osuna had a brief stretch last year, but he also, had a couple home runs, did a few things on, nothing on the base paths, if I can talk at all. I mean, again, drunk warning here, but he had a month where he had a couple home runs. He had a 320 month with a couple home runs, and that was pretty solid. At large, when you look at this season, it wasn't that great. I mean, he had an 81% contact rate, but 7 home runs, 14% home run to fly ball rate. That's kind of aided his power numbers a bit with 7 home runs and 215 at bats. But in general, I think that he's a guy that you can kind of keep in the back of your mind. If something were to happen with McCutchen, he got traded and they gave Osuna a little bit more playing time, I think that he could end up hitting for double digit home runs. I don't think 20 is in the profile based on the fact that he had 50% ground ball rate on batted balls. But I do think based on his power index and just underlying metrics that he could be a 15 home run guy. And that's worth something in NL only. So I just want to bring him up.
Yeah.
All right. Let's wrap this baby up. Evan, where can we reach you and all of your Alabama takes?
And all of my Alabama takes. why Jalen Hurts with his helmet on his head is such a better sight for the rest of us because his fucking receding hairline isn't showing anymore. You can find me at FWFB on Twitter. You can find me sleeping because it's 2:00 on a Tuesday morning in Iowa. And I just want to thank you all who made it through this. I feel like I should send you a mug or a beer or something along those lines. So leave us a rate and review. Let us know how much you loved all of our Pirates talk and how much you enjoy all of the prospect minutes and all of the work we're putting in this baseball offseason.
Yeah, we're getting some good reviews, so I appreciate all of the support out there. We really do put in a lot of time and effort for this. So I appreciate all the good sentiments and kind words and such that we're getting from all this stuff.
I know that it makes it seem like we put a lot of effort into it to make it seem like we put no effort into it. It's kind of like your hair in the morning. but there is a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes. And yeah, we wouldn't do it if we didn't love you.
Yes, exactly. If you're wondering why we didn't talk about Austin Meadows or Tyler Glass now, just wait for Matt in the prospect minute. I promise you we didn't forget about them. We just know that he's going to cover them and Stephen Brault for that matter. I think that he's going to get a good amount of run this year. But yeah, check me out on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. We have the draft guide coming. I know that we're doing promos already, so you already know all of this is coming. But yep, draft guide's coming. We have, again, we're going through every single MLB team. Hopefully a ton of them. I mean, there is going to be a lot of moves made, but hopefully we're good enough in terms of covering all the teams that we're able to give you a good synopsis on every MLB squad going into the season. And I'm gonna be continue to write for Baseball HQ going into this year as well, so check it all out. And yeah, so for Evan and myself, thank you for listening and good luck in your drafts.